quite
unusual.
Hi, and welcome to our show. We are Quite Unusual, and I am Nicole.
And I am Noelle.
And we're here today to talk to you about some alien things.
That's right. We're going to get extraterrestrial.
Ooh, it's been a while since we went down this road, but since this is quite unusual and nothing is off limits, aliens it is.
I am so excited to talk all extraterrestrial things. Mm. We have been doing a lot of true crime and a lot of murder lately.
We have.
And I don't want to say I'm over it because, like, love me some true crime, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But let's get back to our super weirdo roots.
Yes. Well, today's format is going to be a bit different, a bit more relaxed and laid back, if you will. If you're following along with our episodes, we just delivered a two-parter on Lizzie Borden, so we figured we'd give ourselves an easier week.
Yeah, it's good to take a bit of a break from our exhaustive research.
Right.
Yeah. And do some, like, something fun and a little easier. Mm-hmm. Plus, we are getting geared up for a pretty sweet collab and also a huge, huge, huge true crime story for the beginning of 2021. Which we've already started researching, so we're working on it hard. And we just need, like, a little bit of, like, a comfortable day. You know what I mean?
Like a breather. We can call this, like, a breather episode.
Yeah, we got, like, our sweatpants on. No makeup. Who cares?
I mean, that's basically what I've been living in since March. So,
well, I'm unemployed, so I am basically wearing a blanket right now.
Well, she is. It's a very cute blanket, though.
Thank you.
Okay, there's something that I want to talk about that's happening before we get into our episode. It's actually sort of fitting for this week's topic.
Okay.
But there have been these strange monoliths. Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
Monolith?
Uh-huh.
They're appearing just all throughout the world. First one was in Utah, then it disappeared, and then there was one in Romania, and now there's one in California.
I saw that.
I just heard.
Yeah.
It's like a 12-foot metallic fixture. Give me your thoughts, because I want to just chalk it up as being some art students who have a thing for Stanley Kubrick, 2001 A Space Odyssey, but it's weird that it's just showing up randomly all around the world.
My honest thought?
Yes.
Honestly?
Your honestly honest thought.
First off, the Utah one was very pretty.
Yeah.
It looked very cool with, like, the mountains next to it and everything. So that was super fun. But the one in Romania had weird Dremel marks all over it, so I don't think it was related, and I think it was a copycat.
The California one can be the same people, because Utah, California.
Oh, super close.
Close.
Yeah. I think that it's just someone kind of fucking around.
Right.
Yeah. It's very cool.
It is really cool.
And then the capitalist society that has ruined my soul makes me think it's a marketing campaign for, like,
metal fixtures.
It's <Just kidding. laughs> probably not. It's like, what do we think it could be? Name a product.
Shampoo. It just popped into my head.
I don't know any shampoo.
Head and shoulders.
An obelisk above.
It's kind of shaped that way.
It is. It's shaped exactly like a Head and Shoulders bottle.
It's going to be revealed to be a giant bottle of Head and
Shoulders.
Like,
the commercial's like a man scratching his head next to the monolith, and he's like, wow, no dandruff stuck to it. Head and Shoulders.
There you have it. There you have it, folks.
There it is.
It's so a marketing campaign for Head and Shoulders.
Hey, man, it's 2020. You gotta get weird with shit, I guess.
We have to thank our person that bought us a bottle this week.
Our bottle buyer,
Beth. Shout out to Beth. She bought us a drink.
I fucking love Beth. And I love her cats. She just got a new cat. We talk about cats all the time. It's so cute. So thank you so much, Beth. We are enjoying a beautiful bottle of champagne, courtesy of you.
Cheers.
So cheers to you, Beth. Thanks so much. Do you just want to jump into it? I know you have a very cool abduction story.
I do. I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so this week I'm going to read a story, and then Noelle's going to read a story. But it's all alien involved.
Yeah, it's all about the aliens.
All about aliens. Okay. She had to unclip her.
I wanted Nicole to stop because I had to unclip my overalls.
Oh, how farmer of you.
Stop it.
Okay, so My story was actually suggested to me by our friends over at Aliens and Stuff, because obviously they are the pros when it comes to all things aliens. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we say this every episode now, so maybe it should just be a part of our script. But for real, check out their YouTube channel. It's awesome.
I feel like they should start paying us for ad space, if I'm being honest.
If you guys are listening.
I know they're going to. So send us a check. Thanks so much. Also, check out Aliens and Stuff on YouTube. They are fantastic. You're going to love them. That will be $300 for that ad. Thank you.
All right. Well, my story is an alien abduction story. And my story is about the abduction of Travis Walton. You may be familiar with Travis's case if you've seen the movie Fire in the Sky. And it's actually streaming on Prime right now, so if you want to check it out, go for it. It's a little rough at first, but I will say the alien abduction part is pretty cool. And you also get Robert Patrick with long hair, so worth it?
Totally worth it. I had never ever heard about this movie until we were chatting about it with Aliens and Stuff. If you go to the YouTube channel for Aliens and Stuff, you can check them out. Streaming wherever you find YouTube channels. Anyways, so I had never heard of Fire in the Sky until they brought it up to us.
Yes.
And I watched it. And I'm going to say, I like spooky movies, I like horror movies and stuff, but you're like America's horror queen, if we're being honest. No.
I only pretend to be on TV.
Whatever. So I thought it was awesome in an 80s movie way.
It was. It's like a very 80s.
I think it's very early 90s, actually.
Oh.
I don't know, but there's tons of denim. There's like men in like those shorts that are like way too short for even women.
Yeah.
It's very, very fun. It's very fun. The alien abduction part scared the fucking shit out of me, and it made me never want to be like abducted. It was freaking me out. I'm freaking out right now.
I think it'd be kind of cool.
There's this part where, spoiler, where he goes, he's like coming out of this pod and it's all gooey.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate being sticky.
The goo, yeah.
Like if I have something sticky on my fingers, I lay down and wait for death.
Ooh.
So it was giving me extreme anxiety.
Well, I guess if you have a goo thing, then don't watch the movie.
If you have a goo thing, steer clear.
Otherwise, it's pretty legit. So this abduction case is apparently one of the most famous alien abductions in the world for several reasons, which I will get into, but I had never heard of this case, so it was actually kind of super fun to research.
Yay.
Along with the movie Fire in the Sky, Travis also wrote a book called Fire in the Sky, Travis Walton Experience.
Wow.
And there's also a documentary about the case called Travis, The True Story of Travis Walton.
You're leaving the colons out of these, and that's a disappointment.
The True Story of Travis Walton.
Thank you.
It's a great name.
It's very descriptive.
Very. Many people go as far as to say that this is the best documented case of alien abduction ever recorded. So are you ready to get beamed up into Travis Walton's experience?
Beam me up, Scotty.
All right, let's go. So Travis Walton was a simple man. He was a logger and a member of the Timber Stand Improvement Crew. He wasn't a science fiction guy. Travis was more like your typical man's man. He loved cars and he loved karate. And I mean, who doesn't? Am I right?
All I know is that Trans Am's kick fucking ass. You know who else kicks ass? Travis Walton when he's doing karate. That's right. He's a man's man. He rips the sleeves off his flannel one sleeve at a time like all of us. Travis.
I'm so sorry.
I'm just getting like big like 80s like karate kid like, oh, Travis Walton.
Totally.
And he like rips off both of his sleeves and like punches an alien or something.
Okay, well, after he did that... Travis Walton was 22 years old at the time, and he lived in Snowflake, Arizona. He worked with his best friend, Mike Rogers, who was the oldest of the crew at 28 years old. Mike was sort of like the head of the logging crew and would do work for the National Forest Service. So our story starts on November 5th, 1975. Travis was a member of the Timber Stand Improvement Crew as a logger, and that day the men were working on the Turkey Springs tree thinning contract, which basically what they were doing was cutting down trees so that they could grow faster, so that they would prevent forest fires, and ultimately it was kind of just to protect the forest.
Yeah, it was like these guys and also Smokey the Bear, and they were preventing forest fires.
They were all in a crew.
And none of them had sleeves on their flannels.
They loved karate, too. And cars.
They had bandanas tied on their heads. It was amazing.
So Travis and Mike, along with five other men, Dwayne Smith, Alan Dallas, John Goulette, Steve Pierce, who was actually only 17 at the time because he had lied about his age to get the job.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He wanted this logging contract so bad.
So hard.
He lied about his age.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's commitment.
Mm-hmm. And then the last man is Ken Peterson, and they were all working in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest close to Heber, Arizona. At around 6 p.m. in the evening, once it started to get dark, they put their gear away and they all start to pack into Mike's truck because they were going to make their way down home to their families when they suddenly saw a light appear through the trees. At first, the men just thought it was headlights from another car, but then decided it was just too bright to be a car. Then they thought maybe it was the moon, but then they spotted the moon in the sky in a different area, so they were like, definitely not the moon.
What is that, the moon? What's that other thing? Also the moon?
Right. So then Dwayne yelled out, I don't know, but it looks like a crashed plane hanging in a tree. So thinking it, I don't know, could possibly be that, they decided to drive towards it.
As one does.
Instead, they came face to face with a saucer-shaped craft hovering above them in the sky. The men described it to be about 40 feet in diameter and about 15 to 20 feet off of the ground, and it was just illuminating the ground and everything beneath it. Travis described it as looking like two giant pie pans placed lip to lip with a small round bowl turned upside down on the top.
Right. So this is like a very classic Mexican hat style.
Mexican hat.
Yes. Not sombrero that doesn't exist.
Nope.
Mexican hat style. UFO.
Yes. The men didn't see any doors or windows on the craft, and there was no motion, really no sound emitting. It was almost just kind of like it was hovering, dead, floating in the air.
It was like a Tesla. You didn't know it was on.
Oh, floating in the air.
Yeah.
Travis, wanting to investigate, got out of the car and starts to walk towards the object, almost kind of as if he were mesmerized by it. Despite the yells and the pleading from the men in the car, Travis just kept on walking towards the craft, which, if you're listening, probably sounds like a stupid idea. But I will say, I would probably want to investigate it as well.
I think a lot of people would.
Yeah.
If you see a fucking spaceship, a 40-foot wide Mexican hat style spaceship, like the quintessential spaceship.
Right.
You're going to want to check it out.
Yeah.
I know all of our listeners would because we're all fucking weirdos.
I don't know if I could do it alone. Like, I don't think I'd have the balls to do that, but
I'll go with you.
Would you come with me?
Yeah. Okay, after a long day of karate and logging.
100%. 10 out of 10 would go towards that thing. Just saying. Travis explains it like this. He says it was a metallic glowing disc making some very strange sounds the closer that I got to it. The more scared we all got, and they were swearing at me to get away from there, and when I got up close, it suddenly got louder and it started to move. Travis says, I jumped for cover and then jumped up to run back to the truck, and that's when this blast of energy hit me and I just felt this numbing shock go through my body. But the crew said it threw me through the air 10 or 20 feet, and I landed in a way that they just were immediately certain that it had killed me, and then they fled.
It was like that scene in Million Dollar Baby.
No.
He got catapulted 20 feet onto a very small stool.
And there was right on his neck. Stool in the middle of the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was made out of a log. It was very cute, very like cozy chic, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
But just wrong place, wrong time for that stool, exactly like Million Dollar Baby.
So after Travis got Million Dollar Babied,
my favorite verb,
the rest of the men witnessed what had happened. They saw a bright blue and green ray shoot from the bottom of the craft and point at Travis, and it lifted him up into the air, and it just absolutely terrified them. So they fled the scene as fast as they could, and they just left Travis and the UFO behind.
I don't blame them. I would probably want my friends to do the same thing.
Yeah, same.
If I got $1 million babied by a UFO, I would definitely want my friends to just run away.
Yeah. I mean, if that ever happens to me, feel free to run. Mm-hmm. The men in the truck were speeding away, trying to get away as fast as they could from this UFO, when they ran into a barrier on the road, and Mike was then forced to pull over. They didn't see anything behind them, but they were all just like super shaken up, obviously, based on what they had just seen. Trying to pull themselves together after what they just witnessed, they decide that they have to go back to try to help Travis. There was some arguments, but ultimately, Mike was the one driving the car, so he was like, you know what, we're going back, we gotta get Travis. So when the men drive back to the site of the UFO, everything's gone. Travis and the craft are nowhere to be seen. They all get out of the truck, and they start to look around for about 20 minutes, but they can't find Travis anywhere. Obviously fearing the worst at this point, it's pretty obvious that the craft took Travis.
Right.
They get back in the truck, and then they decide that they need to go to the police.
That's a very good idea.
As they make their way back to town, they stop at the nearest phone booth they can find, and Ken Peterson gets out and calls the Navajo County Sheriff's Department. And by this time, it's around 7:35 p.m.
I'm just wondering out loud here, and I don't know, because I know neither of us did research on this part.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is on a ley line.
If it's what?
Like, on a ley line. If this is near a Navajo, like a Navajo reservation, yeah. UFO activity and Native American reservations kind of go hand in hand. And then there's a huge ley line in the middle of Arizona.
Well, they were saying that the area in which they were logging was sort of like the last frontier. Like there was just acres and acres of woods.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of in the middle of nowhere to begin with.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So like prime abduction point.
Prime abduction point, yes.
So the aliens probably put that little stool out there.
It was the alien stool.
That makes total sense. That's why it was so small.
So Ken tells the police that their friend Travis is missing, but he leaves out the little part about the aliens taking him. So when Deputy Sheriff Chuck Ellison meets the men, he can see that they've clearly been through some shit. Some of them are even crying, and they tell him what happened. Chuck Ellison automatically believes their story, and part of the reason is because that the men were just so visibly shaken. They were not the type of men to go around making up wild stories, and they were definitely not the type of men who would openly cry in public. Remember, they're manly men, they're lumberjacks, they do karate.
We're lumberjacks. We do karate in the forest.
In the garage.
We rip off our sleeves. We freaking punch watermelons. I don't know, what else do men do? We smoke cigars. We talk about men caves.
We make beef jerky.
We eat beef jerky. We eat raw beef. We're fucking men. We don't cry. We don't get abducted. We're too muscly.
Right. So after he sees these men crying, Chuck Ellison calls the sheriff, Marlon Gillespie, and he relays the story to him, and they send some men out to Travis's house just to check to see if he's there, and he's not there. Sheriff Gillespie and Ken Coplin meet the men, and the sheriff decides that the best course of action is to go back to the scene and search again for Travis.
That makes total sense to me.
I mean, what else are you going to do at this point?
Go to space? Yeah, right, Sheriff.
Yeah. So the three cops, along with Mike, Alan, and Ken, go back to the area to search for Travis. After a thorough search, I mean, as thorough as they can do, because remember, it's also nighttime, they still do not find Travis, and since it's dark, they decide to stop, and they're like, we'll come back in the morning when we can see. Mike and one of the officers, Ken Coplin, then went to Travis's mom's house, Mary Kellett, and they tell her that her son is missing. Except when they tell Mary that her son was kidnapped by aliens, her reaction is kind of strange to the officer.
How so?
She really wasn't freaked out about the situation. I mean, think if somebody were to tell you that anyone that you knew was just gone because aliens took them.
Right.
Her reaction wasn't what they thought it should have been.
Like, law enforcement rolls up to your house. Like, mm-hmm. This is a trusted government official.
Yes.
He takes off his hat and he says, Mary, I've got something to tell you about your boy. He's been taken by the little gray men. And she's just like, oh, do you want some tea or coffee? I was going to have some.
Precisely.
That's fucking chill.
So she's kind of calm. The officer's like, okay, whatever. This is kind of weird. So the next day, they send a huge search party to look for Travis, but they come up with nothing. There's no evidence of Travis and no evidence that a UFO was even in the vicinity. In the documentary, Travis, the true story of Travis Walton.
Sorry, Travis colon, the true story of Travis Walton.
Which, again, great name. John Goulet, who was one of the men a part of the crew, he says that the police split them up into different search parties. So the crew members, the boys. And he said that the police just kept on saying, tell us where the body is. We can all go home early. Just tell us where you put the body. Because at this point, they don't think it's aliens. They think that there was an accident, he got killed, yeah. and they're covering it up.
That makes the most sense ever. Right? There's all these guys. In the movie, they kind of make it seem like Dallas is like sort of angry. Well,
Dallas is, there's a reason for that.
Am I doing a spoiler right now?
Kind of.
Okay, I'll wait. If there's tensions, I mean, they're all manly men. They're like doing their high kicks or whatever. Maybe one of them can like cut a board with his hand faster than the others. Oh, I don't know how karate works at all. So maybe there's some tension there, and that would be the first logical thing I would think of.
You never know.
That all these manly lumberjack men killed him because he refused to rip his sleeves off.
Exactly.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
They even had dogs there, and the dogs, they only picked up a scent in the area where Travis was taken. So they didn't find any other trails leading away from the area. They didn't find any footprints or really any signs of Travis anywhere. So the abduction took place on Wednesday night, November 5th, right? They searched Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On November 9th, there is still no sign of Travis anywhere. And they have police searching, they have friends searching, and even some alien experts. I mean, because by this time the rumor had gotten out that there were aliens involved. So people are starting to come out of the woodwork like, aliens? Did you say aliens?
I'm sorry. Come again. Did you say aliens? Yes, I will be there.
After a few days of searching, the police, they put a lot of time, a lot of effort, and money into searching for Travis, and they have nothing to show for it. So they start to turn to the six men who witnessed the abduction. And those men are really their only lead that they have. So they decide that these men need to take polygraph tests to prove that they're telling the truth.
Oh, yes. The most accurate of all the tests there could be.
Right. The police started to expect foul play, obviously, and they thought that Dirty Mike and the boys were involved.
Yeah. They put the stool out there.
They did. I mean, I think, obviously, we've talked about it before. Lie detector tests are not foolproof. There's a way to cheat. Taking one can be stressful, so it can give a skewed result. There are so many factors when it comes to polygraph tests that just can mess up with the results, and that's why they are rarely even ever used in court.
I want to take one. How fun would that be?
Me too. I wonder if I could pass.
I don't know.
I probably couldn't.
It's like that thing you do when you're in the hospital and you're hooked up to like the EKG and you try to control your heart rate, but you can't do it because you're just a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to see if I can do it.
When you were little and the doctor used to hit your knee to see if you were alive, did you ever, or like check your reflexes?
Yeah.
Did you ever try to hold your leg down so he thought you were a zombie? Because I did.
My leg never moved.
Are you a zombie?
I don't know. I do eat a lot of brains.
Mm.
Now that you mention it. Did you really do that?
Yeah, I did that.
That's fucking dope, dude.
I was a terrible child.
Aww.
And I grew into a terrible adult.
You're a bad kid.
And even in 1975, lie detector tests and their reliability were also questioned. So they just kind of wanted to have the men take them just to kind of get a feel for the situation, you know?
It seems like most of the reason you would give someone a polygraph is for intimidation, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
On Monday, November 10th, the men go to the courthouse to take a polygraph test, and they ask the men four questions. Number one, did you cause Travis Walton any serious physical injury last Wednesday afternoon?
Is it answered? No, the stool did it. Go.
Number two, do you know if Travis Walton was physically injured by some other member of your work crew last Wednesday?
Well, technically the stool wasn't a member of the work crew, so no, easy, keep going.
Do you know if Travis Walton's body is buried or hidden somewhere in that Turkey Springs area?
No.
And number four, Did you tell the truth about actually seeing a UFO last Wednesday when Travis Walton disappeared?
Duh. Yes, absolutely. Mexican hat style and everything.
Well, it's funny because they all pass.
Well, that's super easy questions.
Well, I mean, if you're telling the truth.
Yeah, which I was.
Except for one man the first time around, Alan Dallas. That
sounds like a made-up name.
I know. Because if you remember, you said that Alan Dallas was the angry one in the movie, yeah. And there's a reason for that. So the first time around when he took the test, his test came back inconclusive, but it was because he ended up walking out of the interview halfway through.
Really?
It's just believed that he didn't appreciate the test giver's suspicious attitude towards him, and he was just like, fuck it, I'm out. But I also read that that was just kind of the type of man Alan was. He had apparently picked a fight with every man on the crew. He was just kind of a dick.
He sounds wonderful.
Yeah. But later on, Alan took the test again, fully this time, and he passed it.
Well, he knew half of the test already, so he could prepare for that part.
He cheated.
Also, I'm just going to say it again. Alan Dallas is a made-up name. What's your name? Alan. Your last name? Dallin? Dallas.
Yep. Alan Dallas.
Alan Dallas.
So that very night, after they all take polygraph tests, after 12 in the morning, Travis's sister gets a collect call. Her husband, Grant, picks up the phone, and it's Travis. He needs a ride home, and he says that he needs help.
That is horrifying, but I wanted to say one quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, maybe some of our listeners are too young to know what a collect call is.
You think so?
I don't know.
Like phone booth? Do they have those anymore?
No, they definitely don't. So a phone booth is where there's a phone you can use and it's public.
When it doesn't have a cell phone.
It has buttons and a handheld device. Okay, and then a collect call is where you can dial a special phone number and then you say your name and then your mom's like, no, I don't want to pick up Alan Dallas's call. That's not my son's name. And then she can approve the charges or not because you had to once pay to use a phone.
Because you didn't have a cell phone in your pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm done explaining technology.
So at first Grant thinks it's a joke, but then he's like, okay, well, what if this is Travis? So he calls Travis's brother, Dwayne, and together the two men come to the location where Travis says he is, and they find Travis in this phone booth, and he's very scared. And once he sees Dwayne, he just kind of like falls into his arms crying.
Oh, wow.
Travis says that he woke up on the ground and he saw a ship hovering above him before it shot off into the night sky. He says he's a little sore. He's still wearing the same clothes that he was wearing the day he went missing. And Travis thinks he's only been gone for a few hours.
Wow. That's got to be tough to lose days and days and not know.
Travis was visibly lighter. They said he lost somewhere between 10 to 12 pounds in the 5 days he was missing. It was clear that he hadn't shaved for 5 days. He had a five-day-old beard on his face.
I bet he looked so manly.
So rugged.
So manly.
They check him for wounds, but the only thing they can find is a small red dot on the inside of his elbow. He had no cuts, no bruises, but mentally Travis is shook. When they ask him what happened, Travis tells them the story. He says he awoke in a room that looked like it was a hospital, and that he was surrounded by three short, bald creatures with grayish skin and big eyes.
I wonder what they could be.
Gray
aliens, possibly?
Possibly. So Travis woke up laying on a table. There was a light above him. Classic alien abduction style. But he still had all of his clothes on, and he says that his shirt and jacket were just kind of pulled up to, just to reveal his stomach.
Love a crop top.
He describes the creatures as being a bit under 5 feet tall with a basic human form. He describes their flesh as marshmallowy, which, like delicious.
Like a mini marshmallow or like a regular marshmallow? Like a
regular marshmallow.
Okay. Yum.
Like the kind you put in your hot chocolate.
In your hot chocolate. Love a hot chocolate with a marshmallow.
He also says that they were wearing the same orange-brown suit and that the suit just didn't appear to have any seams or buttons or zippers. It was just kind of like on them.
Latex. Mm. So hot right now.
So hot. He said they didn't have any fingernails and that their heads were too large for their tiny bodies and that their eyes were just kind of like glistening orbs with brown irises twice the size of a normal human. And he said their eyes had almost like a cat-like appearance with no lashes or eyebrows. So he's basically describing your classic gray alien.
Yeah, this is like a quintessential alien. I'm saying quintessential a lot in this episode, but I feel like it's very textbook.
It is.
Like little gray men with a little suit situation, classic, giant heads,
classic
cat alien. Eyes. Perfect. This is perfect. This is, if you Google UFO and you pull up the first cartoon image, this is exactly what Travis saw.
That's what you see. Travis claims that he fought off the little beings and that they eventually just kind of scattered away and out of the room. And this is a quote from Travis about his experience. He says, "When I was first able to focus my eyes good enough," his words, not mine.
Can you use a manlier voice, please?
You do it.
He's a manly man.
You're the voice
No,
guy.
Come on, come on.
Okay, fine.
Do a manly voice for Travis.
"When I was first able to focus my eyes good enough, I was still on the table. And as soon as I saw this face and knew it wasn't human, I tried to hit it away from me. They were much smaller than me, and I think that's the reason they gave up. Once they found out they couldn't control me, they split. I was absolutely terrified."
Number one, fantastic voice. That was
Thank you.
So
Thank
good.
You. Thank you so much.
Second, that's the manliest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. So he karate chopped these tiny beasts away from him.
Oh, yes. All that karate practicing was not for nothing.
"I use my kung fu grip." And then he says that they were so much smaller than him that that's why they gave up. I mean, true, true. But also, like, all right, we get it, Travis. You're a manly man.
You got so much muscle.
You're, like, fucking jacked from all the karate you do that you can fight off four tiny aliens.
Travis says that once all of the little aliens, he karate chopped them out of the way. He says he peers out the doorway, and he didn't see anyone, so he decided to run. And he's running down this long corridor, and he sees a doorway, so he decides to check for an exit. So he goes inside the room, and he sees a domed ceiling, and then three other doorways leading out of this room. There's only a chair and no other furniture, so he slowly makes his way over to the chair, and he peeks across to see if anyone's sitting in there, and it's empty. Travis said that as he made his way closer to the chair, the room got darker, and that as he would step away, the lights would come back on.
Ooh, technology.
He said that the stars from outside of the windows seemed to get brighter as he walked towards the chair. So the rest of the room got dark.
Oh.
And then it was like the outside was illuminated.
Like a captain's chair?
Exactly. He also said that the chair had a bunch of controls on it and then a little lever and a screen, but he didn't see any words or symbols that he recognized.
I would pull that fucking lever.
Well, let me tell you what Travis does.
Okay.
Thinking these are controls that could possibly open a door, Travis just starts pressing buttons.
Travis!
So he presses a bunch of buttons, and he doesn't really notice anything except there are lines on the screen, and he says that some of the lines changed. Then Travis starts to get a little ballsy.
Well, he's a man.
He's a karate chopping man.
That's fucking right.
And he sits down in the chair, and he decides that he's gonna pull the lever.
No fucking shit.
And as he does this, he says that the stars started to move downward, almost as if he were steering the ship.
Okay. This is the single coolest thing I have ever heard in my entire life.
I know, right?
He drove
an
alien spaceship. Wow. First, he's a black belt. Then he's a professional lumberjack. Now he's a spaceship driver.
He's a Renaissance man.
Give him my number.
Travis then turns around and he sees a human. He says he saw a human man. He was 6 feet tall, super fit.
Be manly.
And he's wearing a helmet and a spacesuit. So Travis sees this man and he's thinks, sweet, I'm saved. So he runs up to this man, but the man doesn't say anything. Instead, he just grabs Travis by the arm and he motions for Travis to follow him.
Whoa.
The man leads Travis to an elevator that brings them to another room that was brightly lit and Travis said had a fresh breeze.
This is an amazing story. And I didn't know any of this before you told me, because I watched the movie and it was completely different. Right?
It is, yeah.
This is extremely exciting.
Mm-hmm. At first, Travis thought that he actually was outside, because he said they then exited the craft, but the craft was in another larger domed room.
Oh, craftception.
Craftception. So sort of like, I don't know, like a holding container for their ships. That's how I would describe it based on the like picture that I saw. Like they had other tiny ships on this bigger ship, and this was like the holding area for those ships.
Like a mothership.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Isn't that that's what I would call it.
Yeah. So he exited the tiny ship that he came aboard the mothership on, and now he's on the mothership. Yeah.
Fun fact, I call my mom mothership and she hates it.
Why would she hate that? That's the coolest name ever.
I don't know.
So Travis also sees other crafts parked here in this, I guess, garage type of thing. The man then led Travis to another white room where three other humans were present, two men and a woman. And Travis describes them as just being perfect, beautiful people with flawless and amazing physiques.
I wonder what color belt they were in karate. Definitely not black.
Travis asks them what's going on, and the men and the women each take one of his arms, and they lead him to a table, and they lift him up so that he's on the table. Travis starts to resist, but they all just start to hold him down, and then the woman holds up what Travis describes as what kind of looks like an oxygen mask, but this one had no tubes, and the only thing that was attached to it was a black golf ball-sized sphere.
Oh, wow.
So she puts this mask over Travis's mouth and his nose, and it puts him to sleep, puts him out.
Oh, technology.
Technology. And the next thing Travis knows is that he wakes up, he finds himself on the highway, so he's laying on his back, he looks up, he sees the ship above him, and then all of a sudden he sees the ship zoom off into the distance.
Hyperspace.
And he's back on Earth.
Wow. I love this story.
Isn't it awesome? I so enjoyed researching this.
This story is so much better than the movie. Yes. Why did they do it like that?
I read that they thought that, I can't remember exactly, but whatever his actual accounts were, they didn't think it was, I guess, Hollywood enough. So they changed it to make it more movie. But I kind of like his story better, so I don't know why they did that.
All right, we're going to remake it.
After Travis's dramatic return, everyone around the world was curious about Travis, and the media was just dying to know. So the media scrutiny was very intense. Reporters crowded the hospital Travis was brought to and would also stand outside Travis's family members' homes, just wanting answers, because that's what the press does. John Goulet also says that he was followed by some government men, or, in my opinion, possibly men in black.
Why would John be followed, though?
Well, he says for several weeks after the incident, he would see the same car with two men in suits waiting outside of his home. Because he had witnessed it, so he was involved in it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I bet all of them were followed then, and John was the only one that noticed.
Right. Travis did not end up taking a polygraph test at first, because he was advised not to, because they told him it would just measure his stress and probably just put him back into the trauma of what happened that night. And considering he was already in such a fragile condition after the abduction, it was not the best idea for him at the time. But eventually he does take a test and he passes.
That's a very strange thing, though, because he seems to be a victim of something. Mm-hmm. So why would they have him take a polygraph test?
Right. Because they thought he was lying. They thought they were all lying.
But also, I guess then, what does it matter? Just because they spent a lot of money?
Yeah.
So, like, they wanted to know, like, what the fuck was going on. Right.
And, it was national news at that point.
Yeah.
People from all around the world had heard about his abduction, and they all wanted answers, pretty much.
That's just crazy to me that they would want him to take a polygraph at all.
Yeah. I know, it's not very sensitive to him.
No, it's not super cool to a man that has PTSD.
No. The National Enquirer awarded him and his coworkers $5,000 for the best UFO case of the year, because apparently that's a thing.
I just looked it up, and $5,000 in today's money is about $13,000. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty sick chunk of change.
Yeah, and I hope that they let Travis keep all of that, because I would say it's rightfully his.
It absolutely is. He deserves it.
they only received the money after everyone in the crew took additional polygraph tests given by the Inquirer and the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. And once again, they all passed. The Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, or APRO, reached out to Travis and arranged for hypnosis to be done by Dr. James Harder. Dr. Harder did a regression on Travis, allowing Travis to recount his memories in their entirety without the fear that was plaguing Travis and that kept him from talking about it.
All right, Travis, my name's Dr. Harder. That's right, you heard me. It's not going to be easy. It's just going to get harder, okay? You're going to look at this watch right here. You're getting hard, me too. Okay, you're just going to swing. Just watch the watch. You're watching it? Is it getting harder or easier? Harder? Okay, great. It's working. Let's keep going.
The session was taped and was observed by three psychiatrists, several reporters, and several UFO researchers, many other investigators such as Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and others who were active in the field actually visited Travis, and they even investigated the site themselves.
I had never heard of this before.
I know.
That's a little disappointing because this seems like the biggest UFO case of all time.
So thanks, alien boys.
Yeah, thanks or whatever.
Many noted the uniqueness of the case. The number one thing being the amount of witnesses, seven people all telling the same story and all passing several polygraph tests.
They really loved polygraph tests back then.
They still kind of do.
Yeah.
Edward Gelb was president of the American Polygraph Association.
Jesus Christ.
And he reviewed the case, and he came to the conclusion that the possibility of five people, remember there's seven, so he says that the possibility of five people telling the same story and all passing a polygraph test and not telling the truth would be 1,000,000 to 1.
Wow.
So if they all were lying about this and they all passed, that's a 1,000,000 to 1 chance of that happening.
He definitely made that up. That's not a real statistic.
Well, he's the president of the American Polygraph Association.
You don't question Ed Gleb, okay? You just don't question him.
I mean, I think that's pretty important, though.
It is important.
To call out.
It is, and it's very cool. So I don't know. I just believed them anyways. Right. But
despite all of this, there are obviously still skeptics that think that this whole story is garbage. Some ufologists agree that the case is true, and others just call bullshit on it. As you can imagine, a lot of people were very skeptical of Travis and his wild story of being abducted, especially in the small town that he lived in.
Snowflake, Arizona, which is such a cute name.
I know,
we didn't talk about how cute that is.
No, we didn't. UFO researcher Philip J. Klass thinks it's just all a hoax, and he believes that Travis and his buddies made up the story for financial gain. He says there are too many discrepancies between Travis and his coworkers, and I'm not sure what he's talking about because they all pretty much said the same thing. So
yeah, and also four of them were on the ground and Travis was taken for 5 days.
Right.
Where the fuck was he?
Yeah.
If this was made up.
Well, he doesn't believe that the polygraph tests were administered correctly, and he believes that all of the men were able to use countermeasures to fool the tests.
Okay, maybe let's just give him the benefit of the doubt here. They're all lying, and it's just this incredibly orchestrated thing, right? When in history
exactly.
has a UFO abductee ever been basically, like, made out on top on this ship?
Yeah.
They're always ridiculed for the rest of their lives.
Yep.
They're always that weird UFO guy for fucking ever. So to think that someone was doing something like this for financial gain, honestly, is embarrassing.
It's kind of insane to me, too. I mean, and to say that they all were able to
fake their tests.
It doesn't make any sense.
Go home, Philip Klass.
Like we said before, okay, fine. The polygraph tests, they're not the most reliable thing. But I don't see how seven individual men could all pass it. So
no, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Philip Klass was senior avionics editor for Aviation Week and Space Technology. And he had a reputation for just having predetermined that anyone who had claimed to have witnessed a UFO or was abducted, he called them a crank or a kook. That was like his thing. Crank or kook.
Philip's kind of a dick.
He's a dick. He basically worked very hard to destroy any and all claims ever made by UFO researchers. Like I said, huge dickhead. And he had a personal vendetta against Travis.
Imagine hating something so much that you spend all of your time and energy into just trying to ruin someone's life and story.
Right.
That's exhausting and embarrassing.
I know. Philip claimed that Mike and Travis came up with the UFO story so they wouldn't have to complete their work contract.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which is absolutely ridiculous because it actually harmed the crew and didn't help them at all. They were already behind on the contract, and with this little incident, it just pushed them back even further. So, nice try there, Philip.
They are professional lumberjacks. They live for chainsaws and for cutting down logs.
Mm-hmm.
Trees? Living trees are trees. Dead trees are logs. They live for cutting down trees and murdering them and turning them into logs. So why would they do this? This doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, Philip Klass also came to Steve Pierce. Remember, he was the one who lied about his age. He was only 17. He took him to dinner, and he offered him $10,000 in order to say that the whole thing was a hoax.
Wow.
In 1975, that was a lot of money, especially for a 17-year-old.
Dude, no shit.
Today, it's around $48,000.
Wow, wow, wow.
So remember, Steve, he's a 17-year-old. That was a huge amount of money for him, and he didn't take it.
Because he was telling the truth.
Exactly. Why would Klass go out of his way to do this? Well, he was involved with a man named Donald Menzel, who was another UFO debunker. But Menzel was also connected to the NSA, which is the National Security Agency.
Menzel sounds like a villain.
I know. And Menzel had connections to John F. Kennedy.
No.
He wrote a letter to Kennedy that said, "When we are properly cleared to each other, I can tell you more." Nobody knows what it was about, but it begs the question, was Philip Klass working for the CIA?
Dun, dun, dun.
Was he trying to silence Travis and the boys because he didn't want people to know the truth? Conspiracy Corner.
This is very exciting. This is another synchronicity in our lives now.
It totally is.
And one more thing I think is just so, so fucking funny is that the government tried so hard to keep aliens under wraps for so long.
Yeah, they did.
And in 2020, they're like, yeah, they're fucking real. Who cares?
Well, they had to give us something. Everyone's just sitting at home drinking.
It's ridiculous. For how many years was all of this hidden and denied and all this shit?
Yeah.
And then this year, like, the president tweets UFOs, LOL. And everyone just knows that they're real.
Yeah, well, I mean, like it's crazy. I said, 2020. Another point that the skeptics make is that the abduction reports didn't really happen until the Barney and Betty Hill incident. So cognitive psychologist Susan Clancy states that abduction claims and stories only really began and started to come in after people were seeing it on TV. So 2 weeks prior to Travis's abduction, NBC released a made-for-TV movie called The UFO Incident, where Betty and Barney Hill's infamous abduction was dramatized, and apparently there was a huge influx of alien abduction claims after that movie aired. Which, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, but I also think that when things become, like, unstigmatized...
Yeah, yes.
Like,
yes.
Like, I don't want to, like, bring up rape right now, but, like, a person could rape 45 people, and until one person comes forward, no one may come forward. And
when people are talking, as soon as people are talking about it.
When you feel comfortable talking about a negative experience that you have because others are sharing, you're more likely to come out and also say, this happened to me too, and I want to talk about it.
That's very true. I didn't think of that.
So,
that's a good point.
I don't know. I think that that's kind of a bullshit excuse.
Yeah. Some people also claimed that Travis and his brother, Dwayne, and his mom were UFO fanatics. Because remember when his mom was like, not that shocked?
Yeah.
And they think that they came up with the idea themselves. But Dwayne was also given a polygraph test to see if he was involved. And he passed.
And so did all of the other people that had virtually no stake in this.
So now there's 8 people taking polygraph tests. Unless every single one of those tests is just done wrong. Like they forgot to strap something on.
Oh, looks like we forgot to turn the machine on.
Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know. Not all of those men are faking this.
Honestly, that would be quite unusual.
And who knows, maybe his mom was super into aliens, but that doesn't mean that her son couldn't get abducted. you know?
Right. She was just ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. Despite backlash from all around, Travis and the boys, to this day, have held true to their claims. Out of the 7 men there that day, not one of them has come out and said, yep, we made it all up. Despite the 10 grand offered to one of them.
And the youngest one, so I'm just going to say...
the weakest link.
Yeah.
I think that's also a very important point to talk about.
Yeah, I think so too.
Many of the men had to move away from the area after the incident because, like we mentioned before, nothing good comes of people thinking you're crazy.
No.
They lived in an area where there were a lot of God-fearing people, and they just didn't believe the guys, and they thought it was all a hoax. So the men kind of became pariahs in their own community after the incident, which is sort of sad.
It's sad, for sure. But remember, this is why people don't fake UFO incidences.
Yep.
Except Balloon Boy, but that doesn't count because that wasn't a UFO. That was just parents in a weather balloon. That was like a fake UFO. I'm going to stop talking about Balloon Boy right now. But this is why people don't bring shit like this up, because it really does ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
You seem like an insane person.
Yeah. Travis, however, stayed in the area and pretty much just lived out his life being ridiculed every day for what happened to him, which is also really sad. In a HuffPost article, Travis claims that the area in the forest where the abduction took place, the trees in the vicinity have experienced unusual growth rates. In 2014, they went back to the site and they did a field survey. And while they were there, they discovered that the trees were producing wood fiber at 36 times the rate that they had been in 85 years.
Wow.
And the effect diminished the further you got away from the spot of the abduction.
Oh, radiation.
Yep. They looked at a tree stump surrounding the area of the clearing in which the craft was hovered above. The side of the tree that would have been facing towards the craft had experienced a thickness in growth rings, but only in the direction that it was facing the craft.
Yeah.
So they believe that it was possibly due to radiation given off from the craft.
Yeah, which is a thing that actually is pretty common, which is why I just said the word radiation with no explanation.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. And a university out of Poland did a study on radiation and tree growth after Chernobyl. And they discovered that trees that were exposed to radiation had grown up to 3 times as compared to previous years.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. So as the years passed, Travis has fully accepted what has happened to him, and he just kind of embraces it in full force. He attends and he speaks at many UFO conventions, and he even sponsors his own conference in Arizona called Skyfire Summit. Ooh. So I guess add that to the podcast road trip.
Adding to the list.
And that is pretty much the Travis Walton story. But before I ask you what you think, I want to end with a little quote from Travis himself.
Aww.
The scientific evidence of the likelihood of intelligent life in our vicinity has become so overwhelming that the people who believe that we're alone in the universe, those are the kooks.
Hell fucking yeah, Travis.
Yeah.
Slam dunk, karate chop.
I just love that because obviously I believe in aliens. You believe in aliens.
Duh.
I believe Travis.
If I you believe
don't,
Travis.
If you don't believe in aliens, you're the weirdo, not us.
Yeah. We're the weirdos, mister. But it's fucking you, okay? What, do you only think that Earth is Earth and that's it? And it's only Earth? Yeah, right.
So what do you think? Are you Team Travis or Team Philip Class?
Okay, well, first off,
Philip Ass.
I was going to say class starts with ass because we're adults and those are the kinds of jokes that we make.
Yep.
I am 100,000% Team Travis. His story is fucking dope as hell.
Yeah.
I'm very upset that that movie made it the way that it was because it
didn't do it justice.
No, not even close. And I think we should do a remake. Okay. So we're signing up for that.
Okay.
This is the coolest UFO story I think ever.
I know. I love
honestly.
It.
Honestly, it's very cool. It's almost like,
it's my favorite.
I know he went through hell and everything was terrible, but for some reason learning about it was like serene or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They brought him back.
Very
cool. That's all you can ask for.
I wonder if they were going to before he like kind of tried to break one of their ships. He's right. Like, I'll just drive this home. And they said no. It cost a lot of money.
Well, I think he was just really trying to grab the stool. He really liked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about the $1 million baby stool. All right, I have a cool story. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Let's get into it. That was a nice transition.
Thank you. I am a professional radio host, so I'm great at transitions.
Good.
Now that we've gone over an extremely cool abduction case, which is the coolest ever, and I'm obsessed with it, let's talk about the side effects of some abductions.
Yeah.
Let's talk about alien implants.
Ooh, yes.
I'm not talking about some kind of hot alien plastic surgery. Although, if we are talking about a little pro bono fixing up my old flesh wagon in exchange for a little experimentation, have your people call my people a little grace. I'm sure we can work something out.
I'm sorry, did you just call your body a flesh wagon?
I have never not called my body a flesh wagon.
Okay, you've never not.
This is the first time I've ever done that, but it just feels right.
It does.
Flesh wagon. You know what? No, it's really gross. I don't want to say it anymore.
Okay.
Ugh, this is the mutton stew of this episode.
It is. It totally is.
In actuality, an alien implant is a physical object purposefully implanted into a person's body after they have been abducted by aliens. Think along the lines of when a wildlife research center tags a bear to track its every move.
Mm.
But we're the wildlife and the aliens are running the research center. I would probably get taken to task by all of our friendly neighborhood ufologists if I didn't mention Whitley Strieber, since he's the one that kind of brought alien implants to the forefront of the global zeitgeist, I guess, if you will.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I'm just going to speak briefly about him since I want to focus more on the implants than his abduction story. Mm-hmm. But I will say, if you have time, read his book. It's called Communion. It's about his abduction. It's so clever. I listened to it on Overdrive. It was free. Highly recommend.
Ah, there's also a movie, Communion, based on the book, I'm assuming. So if reading is not your thing, you can watch the movie because Christopher Walken is in it.
I love Christopher Walken. Me too. And I do a really great Christopher Walken impression.
Okay, well, you have to do it now.
Oh, what do I say? I don't know what to say.
What does Christopher Walken say?
I don't know. Does he have like a line that he says?
No, I don't know.
I bet he definitely says, Whitley Strieber. That's bad. I do a better one than that, I promise.
All right, do it.
I don't know how. Now I don't know.
Say, watch my movie Communion based on Whitley Strieber.
No, I'm going to say my favorite joke from Christopher Walken.
All right, fine. Then do that.
Okay, this is my impression of a walk-in closet.
Okay.
Put your clothes in me. Is that good?
That's good. Regardless, it's staying.
I don't even know anymore. I do so many impressions. I don't even know. And I'm shouting into the microphone. All right, let's get to this story. Please cut all the Christopher Walken impressions.
I'm keeping all of it.
No. Are you even going to keep this part where I ask you to cut it?
Maybe.
Oh, no. At 11 p.m. on December 26th in 1985, Whitley Strieber claims that he was abducted from his remote cabin in upstate New York. His security system on his house was going off, but his wife didn't hear it or wake up, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah. What's the point of having a security system if no one wakes up?
It's only attuned to Whitley's ears.
Mm,
it's dog whistle, but it's like a Whitley whistle. So he walks into his living room, probably has like a bat or something stupid that you grab.
Classic dad in a movie.
Yeah, like when you think you have to fight someone, so you grab whatever's close, like a tennis racket or like a very large wooden spoon or whatever, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or you yell, I have a gun, but you don't.
Yeah.
And he's in the middle of the living room and he sees something that he describes as non-human. He does not expressly say aliens, but I feel like he's just being polite.
So he just says non-human. He doesn't get any more descriptive.
No, he doesn't. He never says the word alien.
Okay.
He refers to his abductors as, quote, the visitors.
Hmm.
He does this quite often, and he describes them as being small and much more technologically advanced than anything else on our planet. He also said that he woke up having lost hours of his life, and he was in a paralyzed state in the middle of the woods.
Whoa.
So he sees this non-human man in his living room, and then all of a sudden, he's paralyzed in the middle of the woods.
Whoa, okay. Lost time.
He has an intense pain in the side of his head and pain in one of his feet. He goes to a doctor, but his doctor says that they can't find what the problem is, but they diagnose him with having had a seizure since he lost like a large amount of time.
So he had a seizure he walked into the woods first and then had a seizure?
I don't know.
Maybe or had a seizure and then walked into
the woods. A fugue state situation? Like he was in shock?
Okay.
I don't know. He doesn't believe it. He doesn't think that that's correct. So he goes to a hypnotist to see if he can unlock some answers from the hours of time that he had lost. In the dreamlike state that he is hypnotized under, he sees four beings. The first is a super tiny little robot. Very cute. The second is a short, heavy-set little man. Think Danny DeVito-sized?
The Danny DeVito of aliens? Got it.
Yes.
Got it. Got that mental image.
You got to. The third and fourth are described as two humans in lab coats.
Interesting. It's actually kind of similar to Travis when he sees the grays and then also the human-like aliens.
Yeah. I wonder if they're humans or if they're a different type of alien.
Maybe it's just like a different race.
Maybe. In the vision, he saw a needle being poked through his eyeball and into his brain.
Oh, I just threw up.
It's gross. And also, he sees a weird tube-like probe shoved up his ass.
Fuck.
Poor Whitley.
Poor guy.
He also said that he had been implanted with some sort of foreign technology. The creatures implanted a device into his ear. He said it was a small, white, flat little disc. Before this, he did not believe aliens were real. Absolutely thought the whole idea was insane. And once he even got into an argument with his brother-in-law about it.
Oh.
It was like a, they physically fought about whether aliens are real or not.
Wow.
Which, I think aliens are real. But I would never fight someone if they didn't think that.
I wouldn't either.
It seems like a whole thing, but he was very passionate about not believing aliens were real. After this first experience, he said he was being abducted over and over. Every time he was at his cabin, he would be abducted.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I have a question. Why the hell do you keep going back to this fucking cabin, Whitley? Does he like it? What is this?
Yeah, he super loves the probing situation he gets every time. I mean, who wouldn't?
I love a good probe. I don't know.
But for real, though.
He just keeps going back. He went on for a while, refusing to believe that he had been abducted by aliens. He thought he was being abducted by a human man and being raped. What? And that his PTSD was turning the experience into that of an alien abduction to make him understand it more. Which for sure happens, that your brain sort of turns PTSD type situations into something that makes it better, I guess, easier to handle. He lived with what he described as his shame for many years, and he didn't even tell his wife.
Wow. Well, now I feel bad about the probing joke.
But he still kept going back, full-on thinking an adult human man was breaking into his house and fucking raping him in the woods. We're not laughing at rape. Rape is very serious. No. But he kept going back.
Wow.
To get raped by a man.
Wow. It's a choice.
It's unreal. And like I said, this happens over and over to him. And finally, one time, he's like, I have to tell my wife because it's enough.
Yeah, probably should.
So he goes, Anne, I have something to tell you. Something awful. A man in the woods. He's raping me, and I think you should know. And Anne is like, the exact same thing is happening to me every time we're at this cabin.
What?
So both of them are full on getting raped at this cabin, and no one's talking about it.
Wow.
They should see a couples therapist.
Yeah.
I just want to suggest that.
That's a problem.
It's not great, and I feel very bad for them. So they both high five because they don't have to deal with this alone anymore. Right. They're in this together now. Him and his wife start to turn this into a game. They never say aliens, like I said, but they agree that it's not a human.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they are calling them visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of cool with it at this point. We're both going through this together. It's probably not a human being. Let's explore this more.
So they're both just continuously being probed every time they go to their cabin. And they're both just do we have any plans for Labor Day weekend? Nope. Cabin it is.
The rape cabin it is.
Why?
I guess what else do you do when you've been married for 45 years? I don't know.
Whoa,
actually, okay. I have no idea how old he is, but I think relationships, they get dull, you know? You want to invite some excitement in.
Mm-hmm.
So they start hanging out So they start hanging out on their back porch or sometimes in their backyard, and they try to channel the visitors to come back.
Okay, I like that. I like that idea.
Have you ever heard the term remote viewing?
Yes.
For those of you that don't know, it's a technique that works for all beings and for spirits too. You focus on an unseen or distant target and you try to sense them with your mind. Mm-hmm. Sort of like telepathy or The Shining.
The Shining.
Groundskeeper Willie. Which, fun fact, the American and UK governments had divisions dedicated to this type of research, along with the American Society for Psychical Research.
Yeah, that's the men. That's what The Men Who Stare at Goats is about. Have you ever seen that movie?
I've never seen it.
I'm currently reading the book, and it goes into all of the crazy shit that the government did. I mean, it's just absolutely bonkers. It's a great read, too, so I highly suggest it.
I will absolutely read that. That's very fun. The government did so much stupid-ass research.
Yes.
It's my favorite thing about the government. It's the only thing I like about the government.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
Agreed. The couple then decides to get some other people in on this to kind of test to see if it's real or if they're just insane. Because it's just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not quite sure it's real at this point.
Right.
An editor from a magazine, which I could not find the name of, but I read all over the place.
The editor of the magazine?
Yes. He was like a very important figure at this magazine.
Oh.
An unnamed magazine, but it was this huge publication at the time. Mm. So he was like a legit person. And another unnamed couple spend the night at their rape cabin. I'm just going to keep calling it that.
Okay.
The couple wakes up in the middle of the night to find a visitor in their room. This couple is totally into aliens and stuff. Seriously, send us that ad money. And they try to communicate to this being and they ask it what it wants. It doesn't answer them. So they ask the alien if it can do them a favor and go visit the editor to make him believe that aliens are real. Willie had cameras installed all over his house, but of course, nothing is picked up on these old school VHS tapes because it's 1985.
Classic.
And tech wasn't great.
Mm-mm.
And aliens are smarter than us.
Yep.
The visitor goes to the editor's room. He wakes him up and he sits on the end of his bed. And the editor absolutely starts panicking. The editor said its face looked like a hawk's face and then it suddenly disappeared in thin air. The editor freaks the fuck out, grabs all of his shit, and he runs so fast out of the house, screaming, "I can't take this anymore. I can't be here." Gets in his car and leaves forever.
Whoa.
So Whitley's story gets out there because of this editor. He's telling everyone that he knows what he saw, but he doesn't publish anything about this. And then Whitley Strieber starts collecting stories from others who've claimed to be abducted, because when someone goes through something similar to you, you go to them for comfort, right?
Right.
So he actually runs a site called unknowncountry.com.
That's the name he went with?
It's amazing. If you want to fall face first into a rabbit hole of alien goodness and fucking just the strangest shit ever, go to there. I was up until like 4 a.m. the other day drinking coffee at 4 in the morning all night long. All the lights were off. I'm reading about how Whitley Strieber thinks that aliens live on this planet or in the planet and that they obey the same laws as us and they're in the government and all this weird shit. Okay. So if you want to just...
Unknown Country.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. I feel like it's a cool name.
I would have went with something else, but...
All right, whatever. Basically, Whitley Strieber's life, as he knows it, gets ruined.
Mm-hmm.
As they all do.
Yep.
Because he came out with an abduction story, which happens to basically everyone with a story like that. Although, I think the world is much more accepting now.
Yeah. Well, but, now that we know that aliens are real, because...
Yeah.
Government says so.
The government tweeted, UFOs are real, LOL, smiley face, in all caps. So now we know it's legit. So before this, he was a very famous horror writer.
Oh.
People thought he was going to be the next...
Stephen King?
Thank you. Couldn't even think of his name. It was terrible. Yeah, that's what people thought.
Oh.
And then this happened to him, and he totally lost all credibility, and his whole life was ruined.
No.
But... he's pretty big at alien and paranormal conventions now. He's kind of blown up as a celebrity in the whole alien world. He does tons of interviews. He's written actually a few cool books.
I was going to say, I hope he's still writing because I'm sure his shit's pretty good.
Yeah, and I feel like he's doing fine again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I talked about Whitley Strieber for so much longer than I thought I was going to. So let's get to some implants while we still have a little bit of time.
Yes.
I'm just going to read off a bunch of little implant stories that I found. While I was researching this, I learned that alien implants are the number one piece of evidence to prove that an alien abduction took place.
Oh, makes sense.
This is so sad. Ready? The previous number one piece of evidence was a bloody asshole.
What?
Or blood coming out of your bumhole.
What?
Yeah, so that's super sad, and I feel like also not super reliable.
Yeah.
But basically, people get probed up the ass. That's like, it happens.
Textbook alien abduction.
they're super into it. Mm-hmm. So that was number one, and luckily it's moved on to number two.
Yeah, probably for the best.
Yeah, I think so too. The term alien implant can be traced to a radio show from 1957 hosted by Long John Neville. I had to say it like that. His name was Long John Neville.
Okay.
He interviewed a ufologist called John Robinson on his morning talk show, The Donut Shop with Long John and the Munchkins.
That's not real.
It's not real. I made that up.
The Donut Shop with Long John and the Munchkins?
His name is Long John Neville.
Wait, you actually made that up, right?
I made that up. I fully made that up.
Because sometimes there's names in here, and I'm always like, that's not real. And you're like, no, it's real.
I tried to think of like a morning zoo crew style, and his name was Long John.
And the Munchkins.
So I could only think of donuts?
Wow.
Anyways, the ufologist John Robinson spoke about his neighbor who was abducted by aliens in 1938. They claimed that they were being controlled through, quote, a small earphone implanted behind their ear.
Mm.
Until it was removed. And what? Then they were no longer being controlled.
Hmm.
I had mentioned earlier that when Whitley Strieber was under hypnosis, he had a vision that he had been implanted by an alien. Like, and he got a little implant.
Yeah.
And he did get one. It was a small white disc, just as he had described seeing in his hypnosis dream.
Mm-hmm.
He got it removed by a podiatrist named Roger Lear.
Did you make that name up?
Nope. And, and to be honest, I feel like this guy isn't a doctor.
Why?
But that's just me. A podiatrist taking out alien implants.
Is that a foot doctor?
Yeah.
You never know. Find the closest doctor to you.
I guess so. Roger Lear wrote a book. I didn't get a chance to read it, but he lists all of the implants he removed from aliens.
So Strieber had his implant removed by an earth doctor.
Yes. Okay. An earth foot doctor.
Earth foot doctor. Okay.
Which I don't think is an actual doctor. I was able to read a couple pages on Amazon in a preview. This story was highlighted, and it was about a man that was hearing static-like noises that he couldn't figure out where they were coming from. Mm-hmm. Every time this guy would get into his car or try to listen to the radio, the frequency was never clear and it would cut in and out.
Very similar to John Keel when he spent all of that time in Point Pleasant. There was always static.
Great throwback.
Yeah.
We did
classic aliens.
Yeah, we did a really good two-parter on Mothman.
We did.
That I forgot about until right now.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to that, do that after this.
Oh, go do it. You will like it. Finally, he went to Dr. Lear to be looked at. This guy got a dental x-ray, because all foot doctors do dental x-rays.
What?
That showed a small triangular object under his jaw. The device was giving off an FM radio signal from inside this dude's face.
No.
The implant was a tiny metal piece made of metals found in meteors. And once they removed it from his face, it no longer gave off the FM signal.
Was he, like, listening to radio shows through his face?
He was listening to Long John and the Munchkins every morning.
Whoa.
The weird part about this signal, though, is that Dr. Lear says that the implants give off a frequency. A lot of them do. And he described it as a deep space frequency. Mm-hmm. Not 100% sure what that means, but he gave an example of 14.74 megahertz. I don't know anything about radio signals or megahertz or nope. What have you in that realm. but this frequency is typically used for two-way radio communication in airplanes, on ships, boats, and in emergency vehicles. So maybe there's some kind of communication that these visitors are trying to keep open.
So Dr. Lear is a podiatrist.
Sure is.
He's a foot doctor, but he's also a specialist on alien implants. Like, he's the guy that people go to get their implants taken out.
He is the guy.
So he's podiatrist by slash alien implant remover.
By night. Also.
Slash badass MC.
Very, very into megahertz.
Badass MC.
And does. Radio signals. That's right. That's right. And he does dental x-rays. So it's a one-stop shop.
Wow.
Call him up.
What a guy.
He's also a Renaissance man. Remember a few months ago when scientists discovered a radio wave from outer space?
Was that the same beeping noise that happened every time?
Yeah. This was a series of rapid bursts, little beeps, which came from about 30,000 light years away. It's common to get radio waves from space, I learned from reading about this. But others that have been detected were millions to billions of light years away. So this was much, much closer and much more exciting because of that. I personally wonder if this means anything, and I wonder if the signal that the implants give off have anything to do with the signals that we get from space.
Ooh.
Maybe. Dr. Renaissance Man Lear passed away in 2014, but he claims to have removed at least 50 alien implants from his patients.
Jesus!
So he was doing the Lord's work.
Okay.
A lot of these implants look like little metal pieces or coils wrapped in a fleshy material with these weird strings that come off of them. These strings are woven into the metal and they seem to be connected to the human tissue inside the host. The strings are called cilia and they're made of an organic material. I read that they disintegrate very quickly after being removed from the host.
I'm getting like a science fiction-y movie vibe. Like, I'm picturing this silica spindly thing and they're taking it out of someone's neck and it's like moving.
Yeah.
Isn't that like the visual that you're getting?
Mine was coming out of the nose is the visual I was getting, because I think I did see that in a movie once.
Yeah.
Dr. Renaissance Man Lear described the implants as being encased in a capsule made of keratin or collagen. So think like your fingernails or sort of like your skin, which is mostly
just
collagen.
Like a thicker part.
Yeah. Which is very creepy and very weird and very gross, and I don't like it. However, one way to explain this away is that when a foreign object is in the human body, it encapsulates the foreign object to protect itself from it, which is called foreign body granuloma. Depending on what the foreign object consists of, this fibrous tissue forms around the object, reaching thicknesses of up to 2 millimeters. Does it sound like I read a science catalog to get that information?
It does sound a little sciencey.
Because I did.
Nice.
This was more research than I thought it was going to be. But this is why companies that make medical implants use titanium instead of other metals, because it doesn't create this encapsulation response.
Oh, weird.
So whatever is making these little implants doesn't give a shit that this is happening. Some skeptics think that the implants could actually just be ordinary materials, like a little piece of metal or a tiny shard of glass from an injury that falls into this encapsulation response, sort of like scar tissue.
So if you were to fall on a piece of glass and a part of it were to just get embedded in your face, because that happens all the time and then no one knows it?
I mean, it does make sense to me. But I just don't understand how people can throw this all away, saying that it's just a particle from an injury like that.
Well, how do you just forget that a piece of glass is just embedded in your cheek?
Well, one time I fell on the sidewalk and a piece of glass embedded into my eardrum?
And I just left it.
And now it's giving off radio frequencies. So.
As it does.
Makes total sense to me. A story from 1967 came out from a woman named Betty Andreessen. She is from Massachusetts, but I will not do an accent.
No.
She claimed to have been abducted and implanted by aliens. Her implant was shoved up her nose. She was getting weird nosebleeds, and one day she felt something foreign lodged up into her, in like her sinuses. Mm-hmm. So she went to a doctor, and they pulled out a weird little metal piece. Mm. And that was the end of that story. She went home. She didn't question it, but she, in her heart, knew it was aliens.
That I can see as being an accidental piece of something in your face, because it's your nose.
Yeah.
But something like embedded in your jaw, I don't believe that that could just happen and you not know about it. Like the nose thing I get.
Like when you're scratching like inside your sinus cavity with a metal rod and a piece breaks off.
Maybe she just like had a really stuffy nose and she was just like sucking in all of her boogers. But then at the same time, somebody was like on a bandsaw with a piece of metal and sure. It shot out. And then as yeah. She did that, it went into her nose and uh-huh. She just didn't know.
Tale as old as time. But there is a similar story from a Canadian woman named Dorothy Wallace from 1983. She also had something weird jammed up her nose.
Will you do a Canadian accent?
I don't have a quote from her, though.
Oh, damn.
But I'll do this last sentence, okay? Sorry. It was described as a thin, wiry object between 1/2 and 1 inch long.
Yes.
Although I don't think they use inches in Canada. I almost said Canada.
Canada.
It's very late here. So then I was just down this rabbit hole of alien implants, as one
naturally
does.
Naturally.
So I went on Reddit, as one does.
Naturally.
And I found, this is my favorite story that I found, so I wanted to read it. Okay. The user is called Jam. Nope. The user is called Jar of Jam.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Jar of Jam 4662, titled Aliens Chipped Me. What is your Reddit name? It's not something normal, is it?
Mine's Jar of Jam 4663.
No.
So I was confused when you said it in the first place.
Oh, no. Am I telling your story?
No, I'm 4663. He's 4662.
Right. What are the numbers stand for, Nicole?
It's a secret.
So your PIN number?
Yes.
So Jar of Jam 4662, not to be confused with Jar of Jam 4663, says, I had a, quote, dream that a gray, lanky alien with enlarged, wrinkly head came in through my window and took me up into their spacecraft. I don't remember anything after that. I woke up in my bed, so I wrote it off as a dream. But when I went to stand up, there was a pain in my front right thigh. I took a look at it, and I saw a small, raised, rectangular shape poking out. There was a new bruise over it, and there was what looked like a badly sewn-up vertical cut over the top of the device that hadn't been there before.
Do you ever go to sleep and then wake up with stitches?
Every night. That's why you're also a jar of jam.
Jar of jam. It's all in the jar of jam.
It's kind of your thing, right? They continue. Now it gets weird. Before any of this happened, I got really sick and spent some time in the hospital. The doctors did an MRI and found 2 lesions on my brain. They said that they were old, probably from hitting my head when I was little. They said that they were something that wouldn't go away, but were harmless. Fast forward 2 years later after my encounter, I'm getting a checkup on MRI on the lesions. They do the MRI and the machine makes my chipped leg burn and seize up. But the thing that really got me was the MRI results. The lesions were gone. They disappeared with no explanation. I think the aliens might have healed them somehow. The only reason I can think of for this, plus the chip in my leg, are that they are using me to research humans, like how we chip animals to track them.
Oh, that was going to be my question, is why are they leaving these implants in us?
Well, then they ask, why do you think this happened? And a lot of people just tell them to get mental help.
Well,
yeah, there's a lot of things on Reddit. There's a lot of people's stories of getting implants and getting abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I guess, looking for people to have like a shared experience or something.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say 99% of the responses are to seek psychiatric help.
Because they think that they have an implant in them?
Yeah.
I
don't know. It's sort of sad to me.
I think it depends on the person. I think it could go either way, honestly, but yeah. I don't think you should be taking advice from anyone on Reddit telling you to seek any type of anything.
No, but now that Dr. Lear is gone, what do you do? You go to your vet to get it removed?
Who's going to remove all those implants?
Yeah. So those are my implant stories. I think that alien implants are very fun.
They are. And I've heard that some of them sort of like disappear too.
Yeah. Or they move around in your body.
Yeah. Or if you've been abducted, then you'll have sort of like a little bump underneath your skin. And then in a few days, it'll just disappear inside of you. So maybe they're getting better at their technology, so we don't know, and we aren't producing radio signals out of our faces.
At least it's not FM anymore.
No,
you get Spotify now.
Yeah,
Spotify Premium costs
extra. You can listen to our podcast through your face.
Yes, your mouth has to be open to get good quality, though. I saw a lot on Reddit of people having little bumps under their skin and wondering if that was an implant.
Ooh,
tell me.
I have a story. So when I was younger,
yeah,
I mean, I'm weird. I've always been a fucking weirdo.
Sure,
that's who I am. I have a bump on the side of my head.
Yeah,
like on my scalp. It's just a small bump. It's probably like a calcium deposit or something stupid underneath my scalp. It's nothing. It's never hurt or anything. It's nothing medically concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was younger, I was maybe like 12 when I discovered it. I was so convinced that it was an alien implant on my head. And I thought that they were like tracking me. And one day when I was at the prime age, they were going to take me up to the ship and then I'd be able to live with them.
Yeah.
And I'm still holding on to that dream.
Can I tell you a story?
Yes, absolutely.
So when I was about 10-ish, I went camping in northern Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very campy. It was a cabin.
Because, love a good camp.
You know, I don't sleep on the ground.
Yeah, you're too bougie.
What am I, a freaking dirt person?
I would sleep on the ground.
I know, you do. Nicole sleeps on the ground in her house. It's very strange.
I prefer it.
She likes it so much. Anyways, so yeah, I went camping with a bunch of family members.
Mm-hmm.
And we got locked out of the cabin for a really long time. And I was a little kid. Yeah. And then I sort of like just remember like being in my bed after that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a stress thing or like whatever, right? But I remember being locked outside and then I was like in the bed all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bump behind my ear that I'll let you feel.
No.
Which ear is it? Here it is. And I got it there and I thought it was a bug bite.
It was a tick.
Because I had never had it before.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a tick or anything and there's no mark on it. Mm. So I have a bump behind my ear that never ever went away.
Oh.
Wonder if it's an alien implant.
Well, I, as a child, used to go camping every summer, so mine can be one, too.
Oh, my God, we're so cute. Take us from this fucking planet.
Take us to the mothership.
Take us to the mothership. I won't pull the lever. I'm still pulling that fucking lever.
I was going to say, you're going to pull the lever.
Well, since Nicole said pull the lever, I think we should read a listener mail.
Let's do it.
Do you want to read it or you want me to?
I
want to
read it.
Okay, go.
All right. So this week's listener mail comes from Jess, and she has a little story for us on repurposing tombstones.
She DM'd this to us today.
Yes.
And I was so excited about it that we just had to read it.
Yes.
We had to.
We talk about tombstones and stupid people defacing and all the time. So I'm excited for this one. Okay. So Jess says, "Hi, I am currently binging the pod and I love it so far." Oh, thank you. "I just got to the Bachelor's Grove episode when you mentioned having gravestones. I have a teeny tiny story. My family farm has several gravestones. However, we got them in a much less creepy way. We bought messed up ones from the people who carve the headstones and use them in our garden as stepping stones."
How nice is this?
"Upside down so the names aren't seen." That is so clever.
I love this.
"And we also use one to set our fire pit on in the summer so we don't start a fire. You can usually buy headstones if mistakes have been made because usually the families don't want them. And they generally can't reuse them, so they come cheap." I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. That's now I want them.
So freaking clever.
Isn't this so cool?
Just a little fun thing. I have some spooky stories from living in a haunted farmhouse. Oh, those are the best ones.
Yes.
And even a shadow man that's been with me for years, if you want to hear it. Yes.
Oh, she's sending them.
Yes, we want to hear it.
Yeah.
I love listening to you ladies and hope you have a fantastic day. Jess.
Thank you so much, Jess. We love you so
much.
That
was so... Okay, well, now I have to go to a tombstone store. Is that what you call them?
A tombstonery, I believe tombstonery? That's they're called.
That is so cool.
Isn't that the coolest story? I was like, we have to read this.
I never thought about doing that, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of like reusing, recycling.
I think it's really nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. Because
if your dad's name is Bart, you probably don't want a tombstone that says Borm.
Bort.
Bort. It's coming back.
It always comes. It's
coming back. So, yeah, I think this is really nice, and it gives them a new life, and it's also a little spooky dooky, and I'm here for it.
And I'm going to steal that idea and get some of my own from my garden.
Build a house out of tombstones.
That would be amazing.
That would be so cold.
Well, if you like what you hear, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
Yes.
And we really appreciate it.
We sure do. And if you have a cool story like Jess, or just you want to say hi or anything like that, feel free to email us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com. Or as always, you can hit us up on the DMs. On all the social medias, we will get back to you. We do that. We love you all very much.
We love you guys. All of our source material will be provided in our description if you want to do any other research on your own.
Which I highly recommend going to that website.
What was it? Unknown Country?
Yes, it's unknowncountry.com, and it is amazing, and there's tons and tons of stories, so hit up the forum on that one.
If you have anything cool or fun or spooky to send us, we have a P.O. Box, so you can send us anything you like at P.O. Box 1212 in Des Plaines, Illinois, 60017.
We started getting holiday cards in, so we will read those the episode that comes out later this month.
Yay!
I'm very, very excited. So if you have any little holiday cards or anything fun you want to send us, we super appreciate it. And we'll give you a cute little shout out. And we're also hanging them up in the studio.
I was just going to say, we'll hang all of them in our studio.
Because we are getting like mega like revamping vibes going on right now.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Do we have anything else?
I just really quickly want to plug if you want to buy us a drink.
Oh, yes.
It's very fun. I love this so much. We're buying different bottles of things for everyone that sends us some money to buy it. We really appreciate it. It's super special. And it kind of feels like, I don't know, we're hanging out a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, we're drinking with you. We'll give you a little shout out, too, in the pod and on Instagram.
Yeah, we've been dancing while we open up the bottles.
A boogie in a bottle.
Oh, that's so cute.
Boogie in a bottle.
Boogie in a bottle. So, yeah, go to the link in our bio on the social medias, or you can go to buymeacoffee.com/quiteunusualpod to buy me a drink, baby.
And remember to celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual.
Bye.